Vladimir Putin dismisses his powerful chief of staff, and more holes appear in the Kremlin's story about an alleged Ukrainian terrorist plot in Crimea. Hello from our broadcast headquarters in Prague, and welcome to the Power Vertical Briefing, a weekly look ahead at stories making news in Russia this week. My name is Brian Whitmore, host of the Power Vertical podcast here at RFERL, and joining me in the studio is senior RFERL editor Steve Gutterman. Welcome, Steve.
Thank you, Brian.
So the apparent purge of Putin's inner circle continues with the dismissal of longtime crony Sergei Ivanov as Kremlin chief of staff on Friday. A nice little Friday news dump for us. And as I wrote on the Power Vertical blog, this appears to me to be the latest data point confirming a change in Putin's governing model. Putin appears to be abandoning the collective leadership model centered on an inner circle of his closest cronies and moving towards one based on one-man rule. As Nikolai Petrov, the Moscow-based political analyst, wrote in Vyedomosti last week, Putin is moving from a Brezhnev-style system based on consensus and balancing elite interests and more toward a Stalin-style one centered on a single leader. The trend started a year ago with the dismissal of Vladimir Yakunin as head of Russian railways, and it continues with Ivanov. Steve, what are your thoughts?
Well, one thing I think, absolutely, it does look like Putin is sort of creating a more self-centered leadership and feeling like he can do without some of the people that have been with him for a long time, at least in leading roles. If you look at Putin going into the future, the presidential election in 2018, which if he runs and wins would give him a 6-year term. He's getting up there in years. I mean, not to oversimplify things, but he may really be looking for young blood. I mean, he may see that doesn't really have much to gain from close association with these guys who are around his age and who are kind of tainted by the ugliness of how he came to power and that sort of thing. So I think, you've got this somewhat faceless Vino coming in. Nobody knows much about him.
And everybody seems to have nice things to say about him. That's the other
thing. Yeah, he's sort of a technocrat, viewed. Yeah. So I think there's a mixture there of Putin kind of looking around, of Putin actually looking for people who will be able to carry out his orders more effectively and do things more effectively. And also just maybe looking around and seeing men his own age and thinking, well, I need to breathe some life into this thing. Yeah. I've still got some years to go. I mean, on the other hand, there's also plenty of, there could be specific reasons we don't know about that he's letting Ivanov go. I mean, it's fascinating. If you watch the meeting with him, Putin, Ivanov and Vino, where Putin says, and he has a great cover story of, look, you told me, 4 years ago that you didn't want this job for more than 4 years. I remember that well. And then Ivanov sits there and has to say, yes, I did say that.
And the media is kind of spinning that Ivanov's son died not long ago, and this may be one of the reasons. But if you really look at it, I mean, Putin doesn't trust Ivanov. Those two go way back, but he doesn't trust him. Go ahead. Did you want to jump into that?
No, that's exactly. I mean, not at all. But just that's another element is the potential threat. I mean, it's rumors, of course. But when Putin disappeared for a few days, immediately the rumor is, It's a coup led by Ivanov.
Led by Ivanov, yeah.
And you got to think that this guy's ambitious. I mean, he was almost president.
He was almost president.
And he was obviously quite upset by that. Yes. He said, "Ничего страшного."
But he wasn't happy about that.
Right, in particular.
But it's clear why Putin didn't choose him. I mean, he would have been a lot harder to dislodge from the big chair in the Kremlin than Medvedev, let's face it.
Right, exactly. So whether Putin thinks there's a serious threat of that now from him or whether he, just feels like he has not much more use left in him, it's a question. But
well, I think it's also telling that the two big guns that have been dismissed, Yakunin and Ivanov, were two people who were rumored to have presidential ambitions.
Right, exactly.
And so there's something to that. Now, there's also a lot of rumors in the press that Sechin could be next. He's losing one battle after another. In the Kremlin, and he's apparently at odds with Putin over the privatization of Bashneft, which Rosneft would like to get its hands on, and it seems that Putin's trying to prevent that. I didn't expect Ivanov to be the next big one to fall. I expected it to be Sechin.
Mm-hmm.
And I still expect, I'm still keeping an eye on Sechin. There's a lot of other stuff in the Russian media. Konstantin Gaza has an interesting piece in Sloan saying this is all about early elections. That Putin wants to have early elections before his term is over in 2018 and schedule them at a more opportune time. And this is part of that, getting the team in place before that, cleansing himself of all the clans. But one thing I keep coming back to on this is that, I mean, if Putin's doing what Nikolai Petrov seems to think he's doing, what I seem to think he's doing, and what most people watching this seem to think he's doing, this would be not just a break with Putin's own method of rule. This would be a break of every Russian and Soviet leader's method of rule going back to Stalin. The last one that was able to do this leader-centric rule was Stalin, but it required serious repression that against the elite. That I'm not sure Putin is prepared to pull off. What do you
Right, that's the one thing that he's shown, you know, he's not Stalin, and he stopped short.
These guys aren't getting executed or even imprisoned.
Right, and Ivanov is still in the Security Council. But I think, I mean, whether or not there are early elections, I would tend to doubt that, because I think Putin usually likes to go by the book in terms of the presidential elections.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it does seem like he's setting himself up, you know, to be the head of everything and sort of removing these, bringing in some younger people and removing potential rivals, people who may see themselves as replacements for him, successors.
Yeah.
So he's saying, look, you know, we're in a somewhat new era here. I'm making the rules. You know, this is what's happening.
But you got to wonder, those clan interests aren't going to go away.
And
so the new team is just going to assume the old clan interests. And you just have to wonder, this is going to be fascinating to watch going forward.
Yeah, how stable is it?
My guess right now is it's not going to be very stable, because we haven't seen this in Stalin, and with Stalin it required repression. The other big story this week is major holes are appearing in the Kremlin's allegations that Ukraine sent agent saboteurs to occupied Crimea to carry out terrorist attacks. This had us all on alert last week. We thought a full scale invasion could possibly be in the offing. Now the OSCE says an alleged shootout between the Ukrainians and Russian forces never actually happened. Reports have surfaced about a shootout that may have occurred between Russian forces and what appear to be Russian deserters. A televised account of an FSB raid on a Ukrainian's weapons cache appears to be a fabrication. The report shows which was supposedly taken on August 8th, shows a full moon, which hasn't happened since July 21st. And then those three suspects that have allegedly confessed, one's a construction worker with a criminal record and a history of anti-Ukrainian activity. One's a Crimean Tatar who was apparently detained 3 weeks ago. And one's a truck driver from Zaporizhia whose family insists he was kidnapped. This does seem to be falling apart. At least the narrative seems to be falling apart, although the Kremlin's sticking with it. Dmitry Medvedev said that Russia may cut off diplomatic relations with Ukraine. What are your thoughts on this?
Right, and Lavrov said that Russia's ready to provide more evidence to the West to back up the allegation. Well, you know, go ahead. But right, as you say, I mean, I think it's quite striking that it does seem to be falling apart. I mean, one theory I've seen about this is that it was somehow kind of orchestrated by the Crimean authorities as kind of to draw attention to the importance of Crimea, which Putin had just lumped into another.
Right, they just merged the districts. Yeah.
So, you know, that may be something that's kind of. But I mean, I'd be more. You know, it's always seems like with Russia, everything's either, you know, a conspiracy or a kind of a snafu, and I think it's possible this is both. I think as for, you know, why the Kremlin would do this, one pretty good explanation is that it's sort of a negotiating tactic on eastern Ukraine. It's kind of the method of, it's a bit of a tried and true Russian method of putting a rock in the road, just like moving a giant boulder into
right.
the middle of the road so that you can then roll it away.
Right.
So, you know, and I think very shortly after the FSB made these allegations, Putin was talking about how, oh, there's no point in having new talks
right.
with Germany and France on the Minsk process. So, you know, that points to the idea that it could be a negotiating tactic. Look, you know, the West needs to press you back to the West needs to press Ukraine,
which they've been trying unsuccessfully to get the West to do for a while.
You know, so I think a lot of the narrative about Eastern Ukraine lately has been, well, the separatists and Russia-backed separatists are on the offensive, and right. So I think this may have been an effort to kind of change that and try to put some of the onus back on Ukraine and get the West to take notice and have to kind of explain themselves to Russia. And
two things that jump out at me. I mean, one of them I noted on the Daily Vertical last week is suddenly we're talking about Crimea like it's Russian territory and this is a fait accompli. And I think that's one of the exact things Russia wanted us to do. We're talking about Ukrainian incursions of the border. Well, there's no border. Crimea is Ukraine, legally speaking. So that's one thing. It's like taking Crimea almost like off the table entirely. The other thing you hit on is Minsk. I don't think Russia's happy with the way the Minsk process. Nobody's happy with the way the Minsk process is going. But Russia had been assuming that time was on its side and they can just wear the Ukrainians down. And I think they're having second thoughts about that strategy. And maybe they want to tear up Minsk now. Maybe they want to tear up Minsk or move on to something else. But we'll see. They had to know these holes were going to start to appear in their narrative, and they just don't seem to care.
No, exactly.
Everybody knows what they're doing, but yet there's nothing we can do about it. On that note, we could wrap it up. That's all we have time for today. You've been listening to the Power Vertical Briefing, a weekly look ahead at stories making news in Russia. We do this every Monday, so be sure to tune in. My name's Brian Whitmore, host of the Power Vertical Podcast. Joining me in the studio has been senior RFERL editor Steve Gutterman. Join us again next week. And as always, I leave you with the soothing sounds of Noise MC.